home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And I'm Rob.
And I'm Garrett. How are you?
Good morning. We're Good morning. Doing these things a little bit differently today, which is
a lot differently.
Cool.
We're like halfway around the world differently.
That's right. Well, although people who call in or listen in at 7 o'clock tonight, if you are listening at 7 p.m., this is live. We are actually live. No, we're not. I'm lying. We taped this morning and you're listening to a taped version, but we should be just as sparkly.
So, so you're taped, but I'm live. How is that even possible?
That would be interesting.
It would be interesting.
I mean, it's been done. I mean, I think, you know, in a lot of those duet recordings, one of the people is sometimes
not
taped,
even there. Yeah.
Partly because sometimes that person is dead, so you know they have to be taped. And then the other person is just kind of singing along, acting like they're all live and young and wonderful. So
exactly, just like it should be, you know?
Yeah. So
anyway, we've got a fun show today. We're going to have Matt Parker on talking about, and I need to know like everything about this because, you know, you never know when you might want to go, you know, buy a house with somebody who's, you know, who you're not hitched to. And maybe there's some pitfalls and things you want to be aware of before you go do that.
Well, Matt actually had him on my show out in Santa Cruz a few weeks ago. We were talking about, he's got some great vision in terms of relationships and people getting together in a relationship and buying a house before they actually get married, which is kind of really solidifying the contractual, legal, really thought out part of the relationship. And so he has some really great insights as to the pitfalls on all that. But our conversation went off in other directions, and he is just so fascinating and has thought out the process of not just buying a home, but evaluating your home and what it all means. And just, it was like, wow, I never even thought about it this way. And so really excited to talk to him about it again and share that with you and hear your fresh and bright questions opposed to my stale retread ones.
Rob, you're killing me. Okay. Well, before, I mean, we're going to have Matt on for just a tiny little bit because he's off selling tons of houses today and helping all of his sellers and buyers. So I want to be respectful of his time as well. So for the first time, hopefully we'll have you back lots of times, but Matt Parker, welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing great, fellas. How are you?
We're
very
excited
good.
That you're here.
I'm stoked to be here too. And for the record, I ain't sold a dang thing today.
Well, hey, you know, Matt, the day is young. Cut yourself a break. You got like 7 or 8 more deals before the day's over.
Oh my gosh, that would be awesome. But yeah, no, I've had a great day. I haven't sold a thing, but that's what keeps me going.
Well, you know, every day's a new day.
Every day's a new day.
Yeah. To be fair, we probably haven't sold anything either, so we're probably
in line,
on a level playing
field. Rob, get in line. Yeah. I've already done 2 website sales today, so, you know, and I'm going to go sell some meat after this, too.
Okay, so, Matt, we're rubbing up against Garrett and hoping what he has catches there. So.
Yeah.
Technically, I'm not selling anything, so if I sold something, it'd be, like, really outstanding, like somebody called and bought one of my sons or something. I don't know.
Your kids are going to end up in some kind of high fashion, you know, like for Eddie Bauer or Gap or something like that. Anyway, we know that's going to be happening.
Well, hey, actually, okay, since I opened the door there, I've got to share this. My son, Jesse, has all of a sudden, like within a week, turned into this video player. I mean, video player in terms of he has a video YouTube channel now. Showed it to
wow.
a friend of mine who went crazy over it, showed it to Rob Reiner, the director, Rob Reiner,
wow.
who thought Jesse, who's 13 years old, was phenomenal for his age and what he was doing. And I went into Jesse and said, Jesse, Brody showed your site to Rob Reiner, and he thought it was terrific. And Jesse went, oh, wow, that's wow. I said, do you know who Rob Reiner is? No.
No. course not.
Well, the nice thing is he'll be able to save up all of his YouTube money that he's going to start making so he can buy a house for Dad when he gets old, and he can use Matt as a real estate agent.
You have just stumbled upon my retirement plan. Yes.
There you go. You get those kids on one of these.
Pretty hard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so, Matt, this is my first chance talking to you. I know Rob hasn't shut up since he had you on the show going, oh, my God, Matt's awesome, Matt's awesome. So I don't know how awesome you are, so we need you to tell us, who is Matt Parker and what do you do to change the world?
Well, I really appreciate it. First of all, I'm not awesome. Maybe some people think I'm awesome, but not that many. But, yeah, I'm a real estate agent in Seattle, Washington, and I had a great time on the show with Rob a couple weeks ago. I broke away from the family cabin, which was interesting because we really had – a fun conversation about buying properties, investment properties, how to buy with your spouse or your significant other. And so I'm a simple real estate salesperson in Seattle, Washington. I'm an author, and over the years I collected a lot of insight from my buyers. And then after some personal problems with investing in real estate with lovers or family members, I said, I wonder if there's something to these problems that I'm having and I'm seeing other people. And I conglomerated a lot of research and said, yeah, there's some trends and there's some themes out there and there are things that people aren't talking about that they should know about. And so Rob and I had a wonderful time talking about them. And I'm like I said, I'm stoked. I'm ready to go with you here today.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, and, Matt,
we have a fact checker on the show, Matt, just to let you know, and they've already reported in and said, in fact, Matt is awesome. Fact check. So just to keep everybody honest here.
Yeah. So Matt, out of all the things that you could have done when you were like 6 years old, did you say, you know what, when I grow up, I want to be a real estate agent?
No. And it's funny. It's one of those careers that, you know, as far as when you're growing up, there's not any respect associated with it. And when you're in high school, no one talks about it as a career. When you're in college, no one's preparing you to be a real estate broker. You don't even need a college education to get a real estate license. But then, you know, you find yourself doing it. I was in sales careers first in Southern California with the Arizona Diamondbacks farm system, and then in Portland, Oregon with the Portland Trailblazers. And so that led to a sales career naturally. But I really think it's a great career, and it's great because nowadays people don't have any time because of all the commuting and working that we're doing. And so real estate really allows you to have freedom. And once I glommed onto that, I've been really motivated to keep that and grow it. And so, no, of course, when I was 6 years old and maybe even 20 years old, I had no idea that I would be a silly real estate agent, but I love the profession and I love the interaction that I get with small groups of people or one-on-one with people. It's fantastic.
So what was it like when you got your first sale? Did you were you worried about crossing all the I's and dotting the T's, or was it like old hat by the time you got the ink on the paper?
No, I still worry about it. In fact, my coworkers make fun of me because I get to my office at like 6 o'clock in the morning and I do some writing, but I also review my contracts because I've only made a couple mistakes on paper over the last decade or so. But when you make them, they have big effects on people. And I made one, it had a big effect, and I just wrote a check and paid for it. But, you know, it's hard. If you truly care about people, you don't want to make mistakes, and it's easy to, you know, actually not cross a T or check a checkbox and make a mistake that's going to impact somebody. So I take it very seriously, and I still worry about it. I wish that I didn't. I've talked to people about not worrying about it, but I think at this point it's part of my nature and frankly part of my job to worry about it.
So when you get ready to do a transaction, and this is probably, you know, you're going, oh my gosh, what a silly question, but do you have any type of like milestoning or benchmarks or checklists that you really do go through and say, okay, called the seller, boom, called the buyer, you know, sent this paperwork in, did this. I mean, how methodical do you have to be to make sure that you're as accurate as you can? You know, and you said you do review your contracts and things like that. I mean, I'm just in awe of what you do, Matt. I know it sounds silly to say, but, you know, that is such a huge thing that impacts so many people's lives that just a simple missing that I dot or T cross really does make a major impact. You know, it might be more emotional sometimes than it is financial, but it's still a huge deal. So how do you make sure that you are as accurate as you have to be?
So great question. So I prepare the contract. I review it. There's about five checks on it. I prepare it. I review it. I send it to the customer for review. The customer signs it. I review it again. Many times I will print it and not just look at it electronically. Although I'm all electronic, I might print something out to, you know, touch it. And then my managing broker reviews it. And I also have a transaction coordinator that looks at every contract. So actually, that's more than five that I just mentioned. There's like seven checks to it. But it's very easy with the electronic world that we live in, and real estate contracts can be anywhere from 15 to 40 pages. And you're going through the course of your day, you're getting calls and texts and Facebook messages all day long. So it's very easy to miss something. And the mistake I made is about 5 or 6 years ago, I simply turned something in a day late because I had misread a delivery date on a certain topic, and it cost my buyers their earnest money, which I think was $7,500 or $10,000 or something like that. And the other party went after it. And so the very next day I wrote the customers a check.
It was very clearly
my fault. And I more than anything, I was embarrassed about it, but you know, and that's not bad. I don't know if I've done thousands of transactions now, but out of hundreds, you know, to make one mistake like that, you know, fully accountable.
Well, you only need one.
Yeah, that's right. You only need one.
You'll never make it. Yeah, you only make it that one time, and there you go. I'm so upset. So how did you get involved in helping folks with the LGBT community? Is that something you've always been passionate about, or is this a niche that you stumbled upon?
Well, I wouldn't – to be honest, it's not a niche that I market to or claim to, you know, really be a leader in or something like that. And it's funny because on the West Coast, particularly in Seattle, you don't think of this as a separate thing or something you need to pay attention to. Or when the national media talks about the LGBT community, it's funny because in Seattle, we've just always worked with people of all ethnicities or life choices or categories, and you just don't think about it very much. So my personal thing is not to treat people differently, to treat them all with respect, to keep the deal professional, to stay focused on the real estate, the details of the real estate, and to listen to the customers. So maybe by not paying attention to it, you know, it's attractive to people from any category that I just treat them the same. So that's kind of a, maybe not the answer you were expecting to hear, but in Seattle, it's just a fact of life. We're dealing with, you know, a very diverse, open world, and it's wonderful. If anything, in Seattle, what I get a lot is I get sellers telling me, I want members of this community around me. And I'm a little, you know, hesitant to say why they want that, because it would lead me to, you know, maybe negatively portraying other groups, but people are really supportive of that community here. And a lot of sellers want them as neighbors or in their community for what I would call positive prejudices, but still a prejudice that's positive for one group could be negative for another group. And you don't want to, you know, because someone might say they're going to be great neighbors. You know, that doesn't mean that another class of people that would move in next door would not be great neighbors.
Sure.
Just because they're not LGBT. So I'm very careful to treat everyone equally, and I'm always interested in their story. And I think what always kind of knocks people back a little bit is like the first or second time in my car, if they've identified that they're a member of a community or, you know, maybe they're a Black American or something like that, I will almost instantly start talking about the political topics and the Supreme Court rulings and everything like that, because I'm so interested in finding everyone's perspective on it. Because I'm not a member of a lot of these communities. So it's very interesting to me to sit with people, get time in my car with them, and really, you know, kind of casually talk to them about how they're feeling about these things. It's just fascinating. And it's extremely fascinating now because the election is, you know, born with so much hate that really scares me on a deep level. And so I just really like to know what people are thinking. But bottom line, end of the day, I think try to treat people equally, and maybe that's attractive to members of different communities because they just know I don't really give, you know, give a care about the community that I'm part of.
One of the things that we talked about before and I found fascinating was how you frame a really deep, holistic aspect of the person who is buying a home and making home choices with kind of deep level things. One of which their relationship to things and owning material possessions. And I kind of want you to talk about that in a second, but the other one, and I'm going to kind of use my good friend Garrett as a little bit of a guinea pig on this one, is Garrett, Matt has a theory or a very well thought out idea about how people sensorily react to their home evaluation, what they walk in, you know, using their five senses. What to you, because you've been in properties and evaluated them, what senses do you generally use in your own evaluation, Garrett, of a home?
First is always smell. I always smell first. So if it smells like, you know, chocolate chip cookies or cat pee, you know, you're going to make you're automatically going to say, oh, I like this, or I really like the smell of cat pee, or whatever it is, you know. But I've gone into homes which were absolutely beautiful. And, you know, you clearly smell the fact that their dogs or cats have peed all over the place. And you're like, you've got to be kidding me. You have not taken time. You know, your house is on the market or you're getting ready to put it on the market. And you haven't taken the time to go get a rug doctor, have somebody come in for $200 and clean your carpets and get rid of the smell. I mean, you have all this great furniture and all these great other, you know, the home's going to show great. But the second you walk in the door, you're going to turn every single buyer away. Can't you smell this? But I've also gone into pigsties that, you know, smell like, you know, your grandmother's cooking, and you're like, oh my God, okay, I can bypass all the clutter because now I remember grandma's, you know, fried chicken or her, you know, molasses cookies or whatever the case is, and you can get past it. So for me, it's always a sense of smell. And then I look, you know, obviously then I start visually going through, but for me, that's what I do. What about you guys?
Yeah. Well, actually Matt and you, perfect setup. Because Matt brought up one that when he did, I kind of went, oh, wow, that is important. So, Matt, important sense.
Yeah, so it's your sense of hearing.
Oh.
Because when they shop for homes, obviously, you know, smell is a huge one. But you can remediate smell. In fact, as a buyer, a bad smell may work to your advantage because it may mean that other buyers don't like the property and that you might get a better price on it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you can remediate smell. You know, sight is a huge one. Buyers love new things. They love shiny things. Now, you know, we're kind of getting away from stainless steel, but the cliche of stainless steel and granite countertops and new paint. But you can change all that, and it's relatively inexpensive. But there's a lot of studies that show what we call white noise, which is a poor word choice, is actually very damaging to people. It's hard on pregnant women. It causes chronic stress. And what, quote, white noise does is that your brain always has to work to cancel it out, even if you think you're not hearing it, like the background noise associated with the freeway, which is very common. Your brain is working consistently to cancel that out, and that causes stress in your body. And we all know that stress is, you know, proven to be associated now with some of the serious illnesses in culture. So hearing's a big one. And it's funny because, you know, we shop for homes. If you think about it, when you're buying a new car or you're buying a new house, you spend about the same amount of time shopping for them and in the one you're actually going to choose. The difference is with the car, you can turn around the next day and get rid of it. But homes people own for an average of approximately 10 years in our country. So you're in there for a couple hours, but you don't pick up on the train tracks or the freeway noise or the jet noise or barking dogs is a huge one. And the example I used in the show last time was that my neighbors had lived near a house that was bought by some famous Seattle rock musicians, and they would jam down there. And I liked the music. It bugged the hell out of my parents. But I really encourage people – It was near Pearl Jam and Soundgarden would jam there with Alice in Chains. And I liked it. But, you know, to my mom gardening on a Sunday, it was almost heartbreaking to her to hear this music. So to the point where she might want to move. So sound is one where people might actually say, wow, I wish I could get away from this. But sight, smell, touch, taste doesn't really come into play. But you can remediate all the other things. But if there's a freeway there and you didn't ever hear it, tell your real estate agent to shut up and lay down in the master suite and see if you can hear it through the window, you kind of can't take care of it once you've insulated beyond a certain level. So, yeah, sound is huge.
Yeah, and I have to, just for the record, all my door jams tasted wonderful. I was like, went and licked them all over. Perfect. Great. Wonderful. Matt, you also, the thing that you talked about in terms of humans and our material possessions and how they relate to our homes, I thought that was really fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, you know, human beings are really proud of being super intelligent, which we've invented a lot of cool stuff, including the phone that I'm talking on now. But we're also the only species that develops a clinically measurable attachment to material items. And there's a real great book written by, I think it was UCLA professors, that studied kind of how many possessions are in someone's home and what our attachment to those things is. And so Americans have approximately 5,000 material possessions in their homes, and we develop emotional attraction and connection to them. And if you don't believe me, just, you know, think about going into the favorite room of your house and someone throwing away everything in that room. You know, it kind of makes you cringe or tingle a little bit, go, oh my gosh, I couldn't handle that. And so what happens is, if you think of the things in your home as little friends, but friends that can't give you any emotional return. So, you know, a globe, maybe you might have an emotional connection to it and be worried that you don't want to throw it away or you don't want it to burn down or something like that. But the globe doesn't really give you anything back. It never will. And if it burned and your spouse was still there, you'd be perfectly fine. But we have these emotional connections that's, again, clinically measurable, based on how much you interact with something and how much you touch it, which is why smartphones are almost impossible to think of losing. You have these real awkward relationships with material things. And so if you look at it and say you have empty rooms in your house that you're filling with these material things, you can see why people would develop mental disorders at the extreme end. But then more in the middle of the bell curve for Americans, we have these kind of these odd emotional relationships with junk, and that occupies your mind and causes chronic levels of stress and anxiety. And they measured it to be much worse in women more than men for whatever reason. I didn't find a reason on it, but again, that's fascinating. And you know, when you think about enjoying vacations, you think about hotel rooms are very bare and have nothing to worry about. And you know, when you do finally clean out a house or a room, you can think of that kind of swoosh, that overwhelming feeling of joy you get from having purged that stuff. And so I would just say, you know, given that we have a number of limited hours in every day, how many of those hours do you want to be concerned with caring for things that can't give you any emotional love back? You know, and if you haven't talked to your dad in 12 months because you're mad at him, but you know, you're washing your table every morning fastidiously, it's just kind of obviously weird.
Yeah. Now, I liked in our last conversation, you talked about going into a hotel room, you know, a nice hotel room, and that huge sense of like, wow, and comfort and everything else, where you're walking into a space that has virtually nothing in it that you have emotional attachment to. And kind of the part of that is that freedom that you're actually getting of being in a nice environment that where you are emotionally free, you know, while you exist there.
Yeah. And your first thought a lot of times is, you know, a lot of times in a hotel, you might be with a friend or a significant other, spouse or whatever it might be. And then you sit down on the bed and you go, wow, what are we going to do? Do you want to go to the water park? Do you want to go get some gin and tonics? Do you want to, you know, do you want to go shopping for this? And then you immediately engage in, well, hopefully it's not shopping, but you immediately engage in something interactive that you're going to do with someone that you're probably going to remember for the rest of your life. And they're going to remember for the rest of their life, like, you know, walk the boardwalk in Santa Cruz or something like that, you know, put your toes in the sand. And, you know, I'm not one to judge any of these things. I just like people to think about it. What do you want your life to look like? What do you want your relationships to look like? how much time do you want for your relationships? How deep do you want your relationships to be? Because everyone, you know, we disagree on a lot of stuff, but near the end of our lives, people universally say it's the relationships that matter and the experiences that we had. And I'm just a strong advocate for people to consider having as many of those as they can and maximizing that richness in your life.
Okay, so Matt, I got to ask you, if I came to your home right this second, how much of a hoarder are you going to be?
So you're talking to an odd person. So we live in a 567 square feet married couple, and it's not permanent. We are yesterday I made an offer on a commercial lot to build a collection of tiny homes. The seller rejected it outright. He thought it was too low, but keep talking to him. But we, every 3 months we do a purge, and, but we also celebrate the purging by gratuitous purchases of other things that we might want, be it expensive clothing or, you know, maybe a trip or whatever it might be. So we don't have much stuff because we can't. And we absolutely love it. And right now we think of our place as a hotel room, and we love going for walks and drinking wine and, you know, going to the beach and hanging out with the nieces and nephews. So absolutely not a hoarder. The other advantage that we really like about having a small place is way smaller than any other couples we know is that if we want to update anything, it's really inexpensive. Like we could redo our whole kitchen, you know, for not much, and make it as fancy as we wanted to just because we felt like it. But if you have a 3,500 square foot home, your kitchen is 1,200 square feet, you're looking at $150,000 kitchen, which is a lot of money to save up for me. So
holy cow.
We don't have very many things, but you know, I'm very happy with my relationship, and my spouse is too. And I don't know, we're happy with it. It's just us. Like I said, there's no right or wrong. There's just what's right for you.
Well, I'm going to be right on board with you because I've gone from the 5,000 square foot house, and I'm in a Rob knows I'm in like a a tiny, tiny, tiny little place right now by comparison, and for about 6 seconds I had a woe is me trail of tears pity party for the fact that I didn't have four 65 inch TVs. And I didn't have, and I didn't have, and I didn't have. And then the second that I, sat down at my desk and I was wanting to, cry and do all that, I went, oh my gosh, what a relief. I don't have to deal with this, all of this crap anymore. I don't have to clean 5,000 square feet. I clean, 8 square feet by comparison. And it's the best thing ever. And people think, they either think I'm nuts or they totally get it.
No.
You're right.
Actually, Garrett lives in a wonderful place. It's beautiful. And not only, his home is very comfortable. It's cozy. In a really stylish, wonderful kind of cozy way. But he's also located in a place where he steps outside and he's right in the middle of,
the beach.
Heaven, pretty much. So
wow. And where are you? Which part of town?
I'm in Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, we know, want to come and hang out on the pier.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking outside. We've got blue skies and like 80 degrees today. So there you go. Anyway, so here we go. We've spent half the show not even talking about how you counsel and work with LGBT folks in your area. So what I think Robin said, there's like a big deal about, people going, great, I met you last night. Let's get the U-Haul. Now let's go buy a house. And then, they haven't really thought about, the real ramifications of what goes on. So what do you do as a counselor in real estate to help people make sure they're making – sound, informed, wise decisions?
Yeah, the first thing I do, because the markets, particularly in the West Coast cities right now, and now Seattle is comparable to San Francisco, is comparable to LA or San Diego or any of these places, but everything's moving so fast. A property will be listed and get 5 to 20 offers and bid 15% over the list price in a matter of days. The first thing I do with people is I try to slow them down. I say there's always going to be another house, so let's just do the process and do it slowly. So we work on the financing first, which is a big pain. But then once they're, realize what a stress that is and they've gotten comfortable with that, then start to look at places. And as we look at places and they narrow down what they're really loving, I encourage people to make a lifestyle map. And what that is a go through, take whatever format works for you, whether it's a spreadsheet or drawing clouds on paper or whatever, but actually live out a weekday or a workday and a weekend day or non-work day in the prospective properties you're thinking about. And what does your life look like in that property? You know, everything from how you're going to get to work, what you're going to feel like after your commute to work, where you're going to go at lunch from work. When you come home, where are you going to work out or whatever you do immediately after work, what that's going to feel like. What are you and your significant other going to do? You know, or, you know, are you going to cook? Are you going to walk to dinner? Now you're going to be in a place where you have to drive to dinner. And I just encourage people to do that and try on the emotions of all the stages of your day. And that'll really, I think if people do it, will really help them identify what's important to them and really how their day is going to feel. Cause once you buy the house, you have it for a long time. So put the skids on, slow down, figure out the financing part of it. And then as you narrow down properties, really go through a lifestyle map of your days in that particular property. And then from there on the West Coast, you have to move strong and hard once you see something you like, because you have no time. But I do tell people that, you know, it's a really tough time to buy right now, because the market is so hot. It's scary. It's even hotter than 2006 or 7 right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And Seattle prices have almost doubled, you know, since we had the Great Recession. So it's, you know, there'll be a correction. There's been one every decade for the last 3 decades in both California and Washington. And we tend to follow you. So there's really no hurry or no urgency, and people think they're going to miss out or they're going to miss their deal or miss the market. And you're really not. There's always another house. There's always another time to buy. And it just means we get to spend a little more time together.
So have you ever had people come back and say, you know what, I'm so glad you made me go through all of this. There's no way I'm buying a house with that one.
You mean with their significant other?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the things that you had talked about before in terms of, you know, I think it's the title of your book, you know, but buy a second toothbrush before you buy, you know, buy property together.
Yeah.
I think I paraphrased that wrong.
No. I mean, that's one of the quotes is, you know, it's much easier to buy a second toothbrush and share domiciles, two of them, than it is to preemptively move in together. And, to answer you, Rob, what people usually in the slowing down, people may come to me at the point or later on and say, hey, I want to let you know we had this big conversation that I'm really glad we had, and it was really tough, but we wouldn't have had it unless we'd have thought about X, Y, or Z or lost that certain house or whatever. And, you know, that means a lot to me as a human being, because hopefully the idea is we're all trying to help each other move forward. And so if I can help people kind of evaluate what they're doing, what you hate to see is what happens is if you buy something prematurely together or even sign a long rental agreement before the relationship is firm, you can really lock yourself into a bad relationship for a long time. And for a lot of people, it might be the best decade of their life. But when they studied it, they found that there's a relationship inertia associated with moving in together. So you buy a place together, you buy furniture together, you co-mingle insurance accounts, you co-mingle cell phone accounts, and then you're in this really crappy relationship, and you know it, and your family knows it, and you don't care about this person as much as you should to marry them, but it's so hard to get out of that relationship, then, you know, it's the old quicksand thing. It's you just kind of can't get out of it. And so people end up, they suggested that a lot of people end up getting married out of that relationship inertia when they really shouldn't. Or maybe if they had just dated another 8 months from separate places, they would have, you know, kind of realized, oh, this I'm not excited about this relationship at all. We don't really have anything in common. And so, yeah, the relationship inertia can be a killer. And it's especially sad if the other thing can happen too, is that people can move in together too soon and they don't have the fighting or communication skills that more mature couples do. And so a good relationship can be turned sour too by moving in together too soon, because, you know, one day you're drinking martinis and going to the movies. The next day you're fighting with the other person saying, well, I don't have my freedom anymore. I can't drink beer on Thursday nights with 10 of my friends. And it's just an entirely different level of communication and fighting and that you'd be doing with someone. So people can then take all those signs that, wow, this is a bad relationship. We don't love each other. We're not right for each other. And then that couple can break up when they were really going to be actually pretty good together. So cohabitation is huge. And what I got and what I put in several chapters of that book was just make sure you're in a firm relationship, whatever that means to the two of you, make sure it's firm so that you're ready for the deep water. Because if you can't swim in it, it's going to be hurtful. And we've all been there, right?
And been there and done it.
Right.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Matt, if the relationship is good and solid and the two people decide they're buying a house, are there advantages to being married and buying a house, or just saying, you know, hey, we're firm, we have a good relationship, and the house itself will be the commitment?
Yeah, more and more nowadays, I stay away from, you know, casting any kind of judgment on marriage as an institution. That's why I use the word firm. So to answer your question directly, I don't think you have to be married, but I think you want to be able to look each other in the eye and say, my intention is to be with you for a very long time.
Right.
And particularly once you get past the romance and disillusionment stages, I think that's when you can really kind of look at each other and have that honest dialogue. Because in the romance stage, we would all do anything for that significant other, you know, right up to jumping off a bridge for them. And then there's a disillusionment stage, and then you want to jump off a bridge. Once you've cleared those, and you can kind of say, wow, we look at each other and say, we have something really powerful here. We love, you know, we love going to yoga together 3 days a week. And man, every night I love having this conversation after work about work with you. And you really have that tight bond, then yeah, that's probably a good time to cohabitate. But if you're in the earlier stages and you're thinking that cohabitation is going to save you, you're wrong. And that's what I learned through my research is don't let the house save you or try to resurrect something. You have to focus on the relationship first. The housing comes second.
Yeah,
well, that's a good thought.
Matt, so tell us about your book and where people can buy it and hear more about you and get in contact if they need to.
Yeah, mattcparker.com. And the book that we've been talking about is Real Estate Smart, The New Home Buying Guide. And probably 95% of the stuff in the book you never even thought of with regard to what a house does to your life and vice versa. So you can get it, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the world. Yep.
Well, we really want to thank you for joining us. And I've enjoyed this conversation just as I enjoyed our last one. So, and hopefully we'll have more in the future. But we want to thank you for joining us on the show. And I want to be respectful of your time so you can get out there and close that next deal.
I appreciate it. I already bought my tickets here at Huntington Beach. We'll be there October
right on.
3rd. So, yeah.
Okay. So if you're really going to be here, make sure to let me know because I'll make time and we'll go down to the pier and we'll go split a fish taco or something.
That sounds great. Yeah. I love it.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Matt, for being on the
Thanks,
show. Fellas. You have a great day. Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Thanks.
Bye.
So, Rob, one of the things I want to remind everybody, make sure to go and buy 10 copies of Matt's book. You always get the, you know, nine for your family and friends and then the one book for you. So make sure to go out and support Matt's efforts as an author today as well. And then if you're in the Seattle area and looking for a real estate agent, it's mattcparker.com. And go connect with him on all the social media links that are on his site. I just did. So, Rob, we've got about 20 minutes left in the show. What's been going on in your exciting world?
Well, let's see. We had a great show on out in Santa Cruz. You're my mutual friend. Scott Fullerton was my co-host last Saturday, and we talked up the new gay bachelor show, the Finding Prince Charming show, and all the controversies around that. So that was interesting conversation, dissecting that up. I don't know if you've heard about that or
Well, we've kind of like talked about it a little bit on prior week shows. I'm just, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, TV is going to be what TV is. So I think for any of us to get real, you know, hypersensitive about the fact that we're going to be commercializing another niche for advertisers to sell advertising to, and for us to, you know, get glued to on the TV is, it's great because it's, you know, a little bit different than the norm of regular barf TV.
Right. Well, I think we went to the level of because the show is a little bit blindsided by the past of their core bachelor person in terms of him having a rent boy past and some really, really kind of kinky, racy videos of him that have appeared on the internet and that type thing. And the difference of the reaction between him in that position, pardon the expression, and you know, like the straight counterparts, where that could have been a complete meltdown, you know, in the straight world, and with the gay world, we're sort of like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, I think it's all relative. You know, you get into these situations, and you know, we've had bachelorettes from the past and bachelors from the past that have all had, you know, took a nude picture or did this or did that. I think they've set the groundwork for us to go, okay, who cares? Because, you know, if it were, you know, 10 years ago and we were on season one of this new show and something like that came out, I think we would have a cow. Because if you take a look at, you know, any of the porn actors that have wanted to go mainstream, you know, they've had a huge uphill battle trying to be taken seriously as actors when, you know, that's, you know, now we just go, oh, you did porn. Okay, big deal. And move on. And maybe it's middle America. And I'm sorry, middle America, when you're listening today. So I apologize in advance. I'm so sorry. But maybe it's middle America going, oh my gosh, we're still going to be up in arms. Because I don't, you know, everybody else that I know, you know, we're just not that phased by, okay, you know, you stand on your head 8 hours a day. Well, good for you. Okay, I'm, you know, next. And we just move on with things. So
yeah, I think it's interesting just because I can't imagine, you know, like whoever the top porn actress is right now, if she was the next bachelorette, that
I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I think that, you know, when something like that happens, it's really the producers, because I'm sure there have been actresses who've been in porn that have tried to apply for the show. You know, maybe they were in porn, quote unquote, in my past. Well, whatever. But you know, they get vetted out before they actually make it to air. But I don't see that as such a huge deal anymore. And for people to think that, you know, they're doing the show and it's like all romance and lovey-dovey, you know, it's like, okay, we've only had 83 seasons of these shows now. We all get it. It's kind of like scripted, and you know, things are kind of, you know, dialed down the way, you know, the producers want it dialed down to, and then you have your 53 minutes of programming.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. And next week on Out in Santa Cruz, I go the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, from the fluffy reality TV thing to a really highly respected, bona fide historian. Nathan Stoltzfus is going to be joining me, and he wrote a book called Hitler's Compromises, Coercion and Consensus in Nazi Germany. And we're going to talk about that from two different perspectives. One, because in the current election cycle, particularly with Donald Trump, there have been so many accusations that his philosophy and his style and his nationalism has bordered on the kind of rhetoric that was heard at the early stages of Hitler's. When Hitler was taking over. And so Nathan's going to draw some parallels between Trump's coercion and consensus and Hitler's coercion and consensus and see, you know, how those two match up. But also we're going to speak specifically about some LGBT issues, in that within Hitler's inner circle, you know, he was particularly anti-gay and persecuted gay men, you know, in a similar fashion as he did the Jewish people in Germany. But in his own circle, there was a confidant who was known to be gay. And how did Hitler deal with that? And the fact that this person was there, the current religious right, his latched onto that and kind of misrepresented it to say that gay people were the real driving force behind the Nazis and all that, which was not true. But so anyway, we're going to talk about those issues and that environment and really learn some stuff, I think.
Holy cow, I never do. That's why we listen to OutInSantaCruz.com on Saturday nights at 7 p.m.
How do we? You can listen to it live streaming through OutInSantaCruz.com or KSCO.com on the internet. Or if you are in the Santa Cruz, Northern California area, you can hear it on 1080 AM radio and 104.1 FM radio.
There we go. We can't miss it. It's going to be awesome.
No, this should be absolutely fascinating. Not that all of them aren't. I mean, I love doing this because we get to talk to the most interesting people in the world. True.
Which you do all the time.
Well, so do you.
Well, I do that. And why do I have music playing in my headset? I hope you don't.
I don't. I wish I did, but I don't.
Okay. Where is the
music
coming from?
Or somebody else's?
I don't know. It just started playing in my ears, like nice piano music playing. I don't know where that's coming from. Okay.
Well, it probably is because you are cosmically linked to, I don't know, all artists who have number one hits right now.
Yeah, that could be something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
That was actually an opening where you could.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That. Yeah. Okay. So here's my self-indulgent promo for everybody. Please rush out to my website. Don't buy it on iTunes or Amazon because I'll never see the money. Go to my website, GarrettMiller.com. And my single, Unlike You, is number one for the 11th week in a row on numberonemusic.com. It also debuted at number one on Hottest New Artist, and they're it's doing gangbusters everywhere on Chat and Spin Radio across the pond in the UK. It's also been number one, and it is a ballad. And Ron and Ian, if you're listening, because they always say, tell us about it, you know, like they've never asked me the question for, you know, 3 months in a row, but they will always say, tell us about the song. It's really a song I didn't expect to put on the album Blonde Jesus, available at GarrettMiller.com, but it's a hard look at yourself when, at least this is my story, when you get clean and sober and you take a look at your life and you realize, boy, there's a lot of things I don't really like in my life, and they all are staring at me right in the mirror. And so it was about the relationship I was in at the time and how the other person looked at me with what I will call rose-colored glasses. And even though I was a complete jerk a lot of the time and really unpleasant, the person, you know, just loved me unconditionally. And when I looked in the mirror and saw, you know, what I was doing, I said, this is not what I want to do. So unlike you, I see me, the man I cannot friend, the man I can't pretend to be, because I know who I'm looking at. You think you know who you're looking at, but you really don't. So that's the song. And it's been going gangbusters. I've got another major Hollywood article that's coming out by Friday from Highlight Hollywood. It's going to be talking about that and some of my music. So Tommy Lightfoot, Garrett, no relation, is doing a bang up article on that. And I'm really excited for all the press, all the support and everybody, yeah. Because this is, you know, these are charts that I, you know, there are some charts that if you, you know, play your cards right, you can kind of roll the dice a little bit and, you know, influence maybe how it's voting. I have no influence on the charts at number one music, and it's been number one for 11 weeks in a row. And I get the daily stats and the weekly stats on how many total listens. And I thought Gay Wedding was hot on their charts, and that was number one. Let me see. Now I've got to go look. Gay Wedding was number one for 8 weeks on number one music, and I thought that was great. But the numbers for Unlike You are now over double from a listenership in a shorter period of time that over with Unlike You over Gay Wedding. So I'm really grateful for everybody who continues to listen to it. It floors and astounds me because I thought, well, you know, I put out three really dancey songs right in a row. You kind of need to put out a ballad. And so I just kind of threw this out there, not knowing what to expect. And it's just taken off on a life of its own. So if there are people out there who are listening and want to request this for your regular terrestrial radio stations, call them up and ask for Unlike You by Garrett Miller. And I will make it very easy for them to get. I'll give them a free copy to play on air. That's how it will work.
Well, and I owe you an article. I haven't been writing, which I, you know, but I have notes on an article for Unlike You. So that's one I owe you still. But I think that's phenomenal. I mean, I'm really, really proud of you. We need to do kind of a, you know, I know you did a big launch party for Gay Wedding, you know, at the Revolver in West Hollywood, and, you know, it was a very big deal. We need to do a kind of a, not a wrap party, but something that celebrates the Blonde Jesus a year later or something.
I love that idea, and it would be so fun to put together. And I think that through my connections with like Rick Giannatos and Grant Smith, who does DJ work over at Rage in West Hollywood, we could probably put something together fairly easily. One of the questions I was just asked recently is, you know, where are you performing? You know, you must be performing all the time. I had gone into the rehearsal studio last year and to work on like a 6-set song set. And, you know, it's different. Here's the deal. I'm not really a singer per se. I've sang songs. I've done really well with the Blonde Jesus. But if you had me get up and like sing a song from top to bottom, I would be like winded and out of breath. Now, you say, well, that's silly because you sing your songs. Well, yeah, because I sing my songs in like 800 takes. And, you know, so we get those, what we need to do. But going top to bottom, singing it in key, on doing all the things you're supposed to do when you sing live and perform, you know, like smile. You're not just like, okay, stand here and remember the words. Maybe dancing around a little bit, you know, winking at the crowd, doing, there's a lot that goes into it. And so I started on a great rehearsal set last year, and then I ran out of money. So I wasn't in the rehearsal studio any longer. So hopefully the, you know, towards the end of this year, I'll be able to get back in and get something, you know, worked out. And I would love to go touring. I'd love to be on the road. I'd love to, you know, be an opening act, do, you know, some things like that. So we'll see.
No, yeah. Well, I think that was when you and I very first talked about it, probably a year ago. You know, that was my feedback was, you know, you got to tour with this. You got to, you know, be out there and, you know, the Blonde Jesus tour. You know,
the Blonde Jesus tour. And my book is almost done. I think I told you that, and I don't know if I gave you this update, but I got the book back from the editor like 4 months ago, and then it sat on my desk for about 3. And about 2 weeks ago, I finally dug into the book just to do the edits. And of course, you know, I'm the biggest procrastinator in the world. So when I sat down to do the edits, I go like, oh, I love this story. And I'd forgotten that I wrote it. And so I've got all the edits done, and I'm going to do one more read through probably in the next week or two when I've got some free time where I can just sit down and, you know, spend a few hours just going through it. And then it's going to go up to the publisher, and then I'll have the book out as well.
Oh, excellent. That's great. Yeah. I actually wrote a small play that I submitted to a local theater, and that got rejected. I just found
out. They're fools because it's great.
Thank you. Thank you. So you're literally, and quite frankly, other than them, the only person that's read it. So yeah, they got a whole bunch of submissions. They didn't feel it was right for what they were doing. So
well,
I mean, you know, look around for other people.
It's a little bit on the controversial side. And so, you know, it was, but it was clever. It was well written. There was an end that I didn't see, you know, it's like a, you know, twist and turn. So my encouragement for you, Rob, is to do more of that, and you're going to find the right venue who can't wait to showcase it, because it really is a neat piece. I would really like to see that as like a short film.
Yeah, I liked it, and you know, I needed it to be a little bit edgy, because otherwise, I mean, the festival here is made up of 10-minute plays. That's
right.
The theme of the festival. And to do a 10-minute play, if it doesn't have some sort of kind of edgy impact,
you're going to fall asleep.
Yeah. It's, you know, but edgy is risky because you have to make sure it's the right kind of edgy that they want to embrace, I guess, is the point. So anyway, that was that. And so...
Well, tomorrow, just to let everybody know, because I know everybody's tuning in all the time. I'm also going to share something with the audience. I've not done any other shows this week, and you're saying, well, what's going on? I'm starting a new chapter of, you know, trying to make some living and trying to pay some bills. So one of the things that I'm consistently trying to do, and Rob was very gracious today, I get to work tonight, and so I would not be done with my shift until 9:30, and I don't know what's going to happen week over week, but We're going to be doing the show live as often as we can, but there are going to be some days where I'm just simply not going to be doing shows. And my guests that I've already got scheduled are aware that, you know, I'm going to either have to cancel or rearrange things. So I will tell you, Rated LGBT Radio is here to stay. It just may, you know, maybe at an earlier time like we're doing today, or we may do pre-records, or we may be doing some other things like that. But we love doing this with and for you. And for everybody who keeps joining the Facebook fan page for Rated LGBT Radio, we really thank you. We love interacting with you. We love hearing from you on the private messages you're sending in. But because we have one more day this week. So my last live show of the week is going to be tomorrow at noon Pacific Standard Time. Hour one, I'm going to be doing your requests. And in hour number two, I've got John Mullane. And John is a gentleman I met super, super briefly at the Wallace and Nicole, their brother and sister, not husband and wife, but they have a foundation called Live the Dream Foundation, and they bring music education to communities all around the country. And I met him at their inaugural gallbladder ball fundraiser back in July. And I thought, this guy is just an incredible rocker. He's got great tunes that are out. And I reached out to his, his team, and they said, yeah, John would love to be on the show. So hour number one tomorrow at noon is going to be listener request. Hour two is going to be my interview with John Mullane, and he's got a world premiere of his brand new album that we're going to be doing tomorrow. We're going to hear it here first on U.S. radio before you're hearing it anywhere else in the world. Now, here's the other trivia note for this. So I announced John Mullane at the show because I was the announcer dude. I was not a performer dude. And so I announced John Mullane at the show. It was great. Rah, rah, rah. And then I got nominated for two IMEA awards. Now, again, shameless plug of the moment. And so if you've not voted, please go to imeaawards.com/vote. Easier voting from your computer's laptop or desktop, mobile phone and tablet, kind of a pain in the butt, just to be honest. And vote for me in categories 33 and 35 for Pop Artist of the Year and Pop Song of the Year for Blonde Jesus. But who's also nominated in the Pop Artist of the Year category? Mr. John Mullane. So after I found that, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. We're going to have like an award nominee on the show. And so I can't wait to talk to John.
Well, I don't know him, so vote for Garrett. Vote for Garrett.
Yeah, but no, we love John Mullane. You're going to love his music, but I want you to vote for me. So go to imeaawards.com/vote, and in categories 33 and 35, vote for Garrett Miller, please and thank you. Because there's a fan vote and there's also an artist vote, so of course I've already gone in. By the way, I'm a shameless supporter of anybody who's been on the show. So if there are any other artists who've been on the show, and there have been several who are nominated this year, they automatically got my vote, A, just for being great people in the world, but B, because they've been on the show. So my vote's already been cast, but I would love any extra fan votes that we can get, because now through September 27th, the voting booths are open online. So that's that. So we got about 2 minutes left, Rob. What else is going on in the world that's exciting and important to you?
Well, I just want to say we've got a great lineup of future guests that are coming on to Rated LGBT Radio, also on Out in Santa Cruz. Believe it or not, I am booked up into November.
Yay!
With guests. So, yeah, it's like we've got just really fascinating people across the board, different subjects, things you wouldn't even think about, not, you know, run-of-the-mill type stuff. So excited to be all part of it, you know. Out in the election world, it is very, very crazy right now, and definitely cannot cover it in 2 minutes. It's just crazy, crazy, cray, cray, cray.
So where do people find you online, Rob? Where do you like people to connect with you to read all of your
awesome? You can find my writing on evolequals.com. What I've been having people do lately is just Google me under Rob Watson, Gay Dad, and everything that comes up for pages and pages is all me. And from the various writings and radios and write articles about me and all that stuff. It's all kind of right there then.
That's awesome. And for me, again, shameless plugs, headshots, websites. I'm doing website design on the side, and it is absolutely so much fun. I've got probably like 20 clients that I've either completed work for or I'm in process for, and this is all in the last 3 weeks. So if you've got a dusty old website and it looks like crap, call me, because we will get you hooked up with a really cool site, and I'll give you the September special, and help you with that. But again, go buy my music. I would love your support for that. It's 10 bucks if you buy the whole album. Skip a Starbucks or two and, you know, support independent music. If you don't like my music, go support independent music somewhere else in your community. That really does make a difference on how they can go be more creative in the future and help bring you more music that you really love. So with that,
I've been listening to your album for a year now and love it still. It has not worn out.
And that's an unpaid endorsement. So thank you very much for that, Rob. Yeah. And with that, everybody, we'll see you live next week on Rated LGBT Radio. We love you. And make sure to follow the show and tell your friends to tune in. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.